The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Yes, Independent Senator Frances Black is with me in studio for the Thursday interview. It's good to see you.
Lovely to see you too, Kieran.
Independent Senator sounds good. President sounds better, doesn't it?
Don't even.
Go on. You know we've got to do it. Let's rip the plaster off and just do it now.
No, absolutely. Honestly, it's a very, very interesting time when it comes to this issue. But this is something that I haven't, as I've said many's a time, I'm not actively seeking. I've never been a career politician and I'm not going to be one now and I'm not going to start now. No, it's not something that I'm actively seeking.
Has anyone officially, I know you've said before, you know, you'd be open to having a chat about it with somebody. Has anybody approached you to talk about it?
One or two of the smaller parties have come to me and said, what do you think? And they said, would you be open to the conversation? Mm. And I said, yes, that's as much as I know. I'll be up to the conversation. And I don't know what it means. I do know, though, that the campaign is almost a bloodbath, as I've seen in previous elections. Yeah. So that's like, I don't know, is it something I want to...
I think because there's 7 years in between, forget about it. But they really are nasty campaigns sometimes, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen people's lives being destroyed, actually, you know. It's a huge decision that I haven't really kind of taken on board, to be honest with you. If there's somebody did come and say, look, this is what we're thinking of, I don't know. Is it a decision that I...
Oh, you still wouldn't be sure if you'd actually do it if you were asked.
Yeah.
Because of the campaign or because of the job?
It's a bit of both, I suppose. I mean, I don't like... Look, I suppose where I'm at with the job is... I'm getting on in life.
And, God.
You know, it's like, do I want to retire? Do I want to, you know, are they, that's the stuff I have to think about and my family have to think about, you know, myself and the hubby have to think about. And, you know, we don't know, like, life is short.
Retire to that big house in the Phoenix Park.
I know, it takes a lot of work to be president, I think. And I think our own Michael D, I mean, my God, who can follow in that man's footsteps? I'm a big fan and I love him. And, he has done a phenomenal job, in fairness to him. So it's big shoes to stand into, you know.
It'll be interesting to see whether the campaign falls victim to modern politics and culture wars and all of that, won't it?
Yeah.
You know,
is it going to be worse than it ever was?
Yeah, there's always attacking the person, playing the man, not the ball, as it were. Yeah. And there's always a bit of people suggesting they can do things that they're going to do things the president can't really do. But I just wonder, will that be ramped up this time now? It's kind of, you know, especially when you've got the likes of Conor McGregor talking about going for it. Now, he might last very long. I suspect he won't go for it at all in the long run. How would you feel about someone like that running for president? Kind of wanting to represent all of us.
I mean, I don't think he'll get nominated. I don't think it would be, you know, I think there was a poll done where, you know, there was a lot of certainly TDs and senators asked, and I don't think there was many that would be inclined to nominate. I think you need to get 20 nominations. Yeah. And then obviously councils, if not 20 nominations, you would get 4 councils. I'm not sure that he will get the nomination. Who knows? But who knows is really the question. Who knows who's going to run?
Well, that's the thing. I thought we might have had a few names on the ballot by now, because people would have to make a decision in the next 4 to 5 weeks, certainly, you'd imagine, to get a campaign up and running. Do you find it flattering to be...
Very flattering.
Yeah.
Of course it's flattering, Kieran. I mean, it's been... To have my name in the pot, and it kind of... You know, probably started after I got elected in February, where people were saying my name. And I'm really honestly shocked and surprised, but also flattered that people would even consider my name to be in there, to be in the mix. It's really, truly, my mother and father would have been very proud. You know, we come from Charlemont Street, inner city Dublin, not too far from here. Mm. Tenement houses, you know, I left school when I was 15. I went back to college later on in life, but, you know... So, I mean, it's been an incredible journey. My journey has been an incredible journey. And to be working and doing what I'm doing now, again, even to be in the Senate is a huge honour. And I take that role very seriously, I have to say.
Were you always politically engaged?
I've always, I suppose, been an activist, and I've always struggled with injustice, for sure.
And can you remember an early example of that from your childhood? Or even teenage years?
Yeah, I probably would have, bearing in mind I left school when I was 15, but I was walking past Trinity College one time and I walked, there was a sign outside about the dirty protest and what was going on up in the H blocks. And I suppose I was only probably about 16 at the time, maybe 17. And I thought, oh, that looks interesting. And I went in and I saw, I suppose, the hunger strike and what was happening and how people were fighting for their rights at that time. And I was kind of, that was probably the beginning. And then I was also involved in the anti-nuclear campaign many, many, way, way, way before you were born. Yeah, I've always been on the, obviously Palestine has been an area, I've always been an activist around Palestine. So, yeah, I mean, I've always fought against injustice, I suppose.
Why have you gravitated so much to the Palestine issue?
Well, as I say, I've always been an activist and I've always known about, you know, I would have read a little bit back in the day, back, you know, about what's going on over there and, you know, Gaza and it like being like an open prison and then what was happening in the West Bank. And then when I got elected into Seanad Éireann, I was asked to become the, would I consider becoming the chairperson of the Friends of Palestine. In Leinster House, you know, they have all these kind of different committees. So there's like the Friends of the US and the Friends of, you know, different countries. And I was asked to become the chairperson of the Friends of Palestine. And that really, I suppose I was really educated by that. So what that means is people would come from Palestine and I would host briefings and I would, you know, invite all members into those briefings. And I really, it was only when those briefings started to happen that I realised the extent of, I suppose, what I would say injustice that's going on over there. And then back in 2018, I was very lucky to get into Gaza and I was in the West Bank as well. And that was an unbelievable eye opener. I really thought I knew stuff, but I had no idea how bad it was. And what I saw was, it will stay with me for the rest of my days. And now, I met a young woman who in Gaza, when you go into Gaza, you know, you're going into a place that's deprivation and it's like there's no road, there's no real proper infrastructure. It's huge poverty. People, electricity gets cut off at any time of the day. So they don't know when that's going to happen. That's really impacts them. Their water is polluted. And I met some incredible people who were working in non-government organisations, their NGOs, and a young woman saying to me, you know, why have the international community abandoned us? And that has stayed with me that will stay with me till my deathbed, because we have abandoned the people of Gaza and we've abandoned the people of the West Bank. Because when I left Gaza and went over to the West Bank and I did see the apartheid regime over there and I saw how people were not able to walk down their own streets where they were born and reared, where they had markets, you know, in Hebron, and they were pushed up into the hills, into the kind of refugee camps, and they're not allowed. And if they did walk, the army was there defending those particular streets where they used to live. And I remember there was a group at the time who brought us around called Breaking the Silence of ex-IDF soldiers and who had left the army and who were absolutely, obviously their conscience got the better of them, and they set up this thing called Breaking the Silence where they wanted to talk about it. And one man said to me, and I'll never forget it, he said, when I went into the army first, I was told that I had to make my presence felt. And I said, you know, what does that mean? And it was like you go into a Palestinian area at 12 o'clock at night, if you were on from 12 to 8 in the morning, and you go into a place and you terrorise that house and you drag people up out of the bed so as the neighbours can hear. And that really, really shook me. You know, that really, that's going on. That's probably, I mean, it's a million times worse now. It's absolutely, we're getting daily updates. Yesterday there was, you know, I think 300 armed settlers went into a farmland yesterday. I mean, I'm getting updates daily. And, you know, they killed people there, one of them being a child. They shot them. This is now settler. This is settlers. This is not the army. This is, you know, armed settlers. And the Israeli army stood by. And, you know, so like there's no protection. You know, they can't even drive down their own roads. It's an apartheid regime. Anyway, so I suppose for me, I really felt when I came back, I had to do something that would make an impact. And I was very lucky to be working with wonderful NGOs like Sadaka and, you know, Trokera and Christian Aid and all of those who helped me draft up the Occupied Territories Bill.
And why do you think the experience of Palestinians resonates with Irish people more so than, you know, other oppressed people around the world? Yeah, we only have so much bandwidth. You know, there's people that say, why are you not protesting about this, that and the other? You couldn't protest about every example of oppression. It's all you do morning, noon and night. So it's understandable on a human level you gravitate one towards to another. But I just wonder why you think maybe there's
Well, we know. It's in our DNA. We know what it's like to be colonised. You know, we know what it's like. You know, there's something in our, you know, like that kind of intergenerational trauma that we will always have within us. We know that our ancestors' homes were taken and people were put out. And, you know, so we know what it's like to be put out on the roads and for our homes and our lands to be taken. Now, I don't know if that's one of the reasons, but what's happening in Palestine is one of the worst genocides that we will ever experience, and certainly in my lifetime. It's outrageous what's going on. I mean, when you look at, you know, 18,000 children who are dead, innocent children, innocent men, women and children who are being murdered on a daily basis. I mean, the world is watching, the governing powers are watching, and nobody's doing anything. It's beyond belief, actually. But the people see it. The people of Ireland see it. The activists are, people are angry. People are really angry. And it's, there's only so much people can take watching this on a daily basis. So, I mean, it's off the Richter scale what's happening over there, and nobody's doing anything. And I think that's what's happening.
Jack Chambers is going to be in with us a little bit later talking about Exchequer returns. And I'm going to ask him about the Occupied Territories Bill, because there was headlines in the paper earlier in the week that it's going to be shelved, that, you know, the government, for a variety of reasons, I suspect we all know what the reason is, a fear of economic pushback from
I'm not sure what that economic pushback is, to be honest with you. I'm not sure where that's coming. I'll be meeting Simon Harris on this coming Tuesday to discuss.
Do you get the sense that that they are planning to shelve it, or certainly at least long finger it to the point that they don't have to make a decision?
I think that's something that they probably will do. I will hear more on Tuesday. I would say that's definitely on my gut, even though I haven't heard it from the Taoiseach himself. My gut is telling me that it is definitely going to be put on the long finger. But look, the situation as it stands for me is clear, is that the government went into this election, right, from my perspective, making clear commitments to pass this bill. I sat with Taoiseach Micheál Martin, and he made a promise he was going to pass this bill. Why has that changed? That's one of the questions. I mean, it has been included in the programme for government now. Also the officials in the department also said that I sat with them and we went through the amendments and we were in agreement with the amendments. What amendments? I was in agreement with them. So there was no issues on this before the election. So I'd like to know what has changed. I don't think there should be any more delays. I will be absolutely really asking the Taoiseach on Tuesday to pass this bill in its entirety, goods and services, and as soon as possible. There's a genocide happening. There are no consequences to what Israel are doing, and it's outrageous.
And we're tight on time, but we'll imagine for a moment his pushback is something like, listen, Francis, I actually agree with you in broad brushstrokes, but we don't think this bill will do anything to bring about an end to that genocide. It's not going to help anyone there. And everything is so up in the air from an economic point of view, and the transatlantic relationship is, you know, the nature of it is so tenuous with trade wars and everything. We just want to be really careful about what we do. I don't know, but if I had to put money on it, I suspect that's the line of argument he might make.
To me, that's a complete and utter cop-out. I have to be honest with you, Ciarán. I mean, look, the reality is this is only one tiny baby step. It's not much, you know what I mean? But it would be the only one consequence, because there are no consequences to what Israel are doing. They're murdering people on a daily basis. They're terrorizing people. There are people lying under rubble this moment, but we don't know if they're dead or alive. There are no consequences. The governing powers are watching. Ireland can lead out on this. We can lead out on this the same way we led out in apartheid South Africa. We can do this. It's one tiny step for consequences to what Israel are doing to the Palestinian people. And there's no, you can't argue against that. There's no argument against that, to be honest with you, Ciarán. Do you know what I mean?
You have a few voters on the text line here anyway, if you do run. I hope Frances does run. She has my vote anyway. She's so inspiring to somebody else and gives us hope for justice and peace in Palestine and elsewhere. The government should have passed that occupied territories bill a long, long time ago. Frances, thanks a million for coming
thanks
in to
me,
us.
Ciarán. Thanks for having me in.
Frances Plank, independent senator, not quite president yet.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciarán Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.